If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Your social calendar is filling up quick right now. Summer's coming, and I'm here to remind you to schedule a visit to the northwest side of Chicago to the best butcher shop in Chicago, Joseph's Finest Meats. Why? I grew up in a butcher shop. I know the difference between quality and not quality. And I'm telling you, I would not be advertising or supporting them if I didn't know their product. Whether it's Italian sausage, USDA prime aged beef, or delicious chops, and get them thick and brine them. These guys are a must for summer cooking. If you don't have the time, you're frantic, and people are coming over, I'm not ready, go there and get what you need. They have frozen stock, they have frozen items, homemade, frozen, the kind of thing that you would serve at your home to your family and friends. When you're at Joseph's Finest Meats, Sal and Ben will treat you like family. I guarantee that, personally guarantee, because it is a family business. It's a family butcher shop. There are a few of them left. These are the last of the breed. So do yourself and anyone on your social calendar a favor and make time to visit Joseph's Finest Meats on Addison and Nordica on the far northwest side of the city. A family tradition since 1977, 7101 West Addison Street, Chicago. Prime aged beef, sausages, homemade, and only the finest meats and cheese. And don't forget the provolone. I'm going to call and check and see if you got it. Joseph's Finest Meats, the proud sponsors of John Cass News and the Chicago Way podcast. Cheers. I don't know what it'll take in this country or in this city to recognize the fact that there's one guy who speaks truth to power. His name is Dan Proft. Dan is the most necessary talk show host I've heard in many years. Necessary because Chicago needs it. They need to hear. The people need to hear what he's saying. Clarity, non-sentimental, and truth. And Dan Proft is our guest, as promised, on the Chicago Way podcast today. Jeff Carlin, co-host Jeff Carlin, executive producer WGN Radio, and me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, where less than a dollar a week, you get a cup of common sense. So where are you as the city of Chicago spirals toward more chaos, an election, a mayoral election, and people in this country line up wearing pink outfits to celebrate the woman as victim who killed three children in cold blood? You're on the Chicago Way podcast with John Cass, Jeff Carlin, and Dan Proft on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way, that's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Promise. Dan, welcome back to the Chicago Way.
Good to be with you as always, John. Thank you. I'm back from my vacation until my next vacation in a couple of weeks.
Where did you go?
I went to the Grand Canyon.
Heck yeah.
I did a 4-day rafting trip down the Colorado River because, you know, I'm a survivalist.
Bear Grylls.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. Filtering your own pee. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, 100%. I do that domestically in Chicago.
Just in case.
just for the principle of it. It was if people haven't done it, I talked a bit about it on the show this week. If people haven't done it, it's just an awesome trip. It's one of those places that's just unique and humbling. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thank you for not saying it was spiritual.
Yeah. It was a rejuvenating. I was reborn in the Colorado River, John Cass.
Okay, good. I'm glad of that. But I could tell when you were back on the air, well, maybe I felt this way, because when you were on vacation, I kind of tried it, and I was, you know, going back to Mully and Henley then, I wanted to hear something that was entertaining. And all of a sudden, Mully gets bounced, and you're back. I'm confused. Help me out here.
Well, I was just talking about that with Carlin. I don't really pay attention to sports talk radio because it's so banal and unlistenable, generally speaking. And as I've
of course.
And I always say, you know, that all those guys, they're so desperate to be taken seriously. This is why the sports press corps is just an adjunct of the political press corps in Chicago and nationally. That's why they're a bunch of leftist goofs, for the most part. Mike North. Couple exceptions. But anyway, so I didn't really know anything about the Mully thing. I saw that he got removed from the air, but I don't know why that happened, nor do I care.
Unless you have the interest in a betting empire. Well,
all right. So what is the landscape that you see now in Illinois and elsewhere? Chicago, Illinois, the Hakeem Jeffries, Paul Yachi, as you call him, begging to be eaten last by the alligators or crocodiles of the Democratic Socialists without ever once mentioning Mensheviks. I don't know how they could do that, but they do it. So what's your view of the landscape?
Well, that's really the story, the cycle, isn't it? That the neo-Bolsheviks have broken through. They're not just sort of a carnival act, that they're winning races and they have the potential to win key statewide races across the country, including in the Midwest, of course, with El Sharia up there in Michigan. And they've taken over that party. There's no question about that. And so a lot of us have been talking about this for a long time because you can see the gathering storm. And now the storm is here. So I think that's the story. And you see it thinking about it local, you see it in the state, and particularly now that the mayor's race is kicking up in Chicago, you see a lot of pantomiming of the rhetoric. Now, there's a lot of shapeshifters. A lot of people are not ideological, but they know where they need to be competitive in a one party state like Illinois and one party city like Chicago. So, you know, people like Ali G, he's not philosophical. He's a mimbo, right? But he's trying to sort of do a hybrid of the soaring Obama flim flammer rhetoric along with the DSA talking points, or at least enough of them to appeal to where the energy is in that party. So I think that's the story. I think you're seeing it manifest itself in slightly different ways, locally, state, and versus national. But that's the story of the cycle.
The question for this podcast is, does Ali G, does his ears turn red and burn every time I mention Jaws Giringo, his buddy and recipient of millions of dollars in loans from Broadway Bank? The Chicago Heights, what is he? Chicago Heights bookie and organized crime figure.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously you remember the 2010 Senate race when he was the nominee against Mark Kirk, and that the combination of those things, being a mob banker and then also failing at being a mob banker, tubed his candidacy. I think it's an issue. I think it's an issue that will be brought up again and should be. A lot of people don't remember 2010. You know, people have very short memories, particularly with respect to politics. So I'm sure somebody will bring it up, I mean, in the field. And I think it's a big issue. I think it's a big problem for him because, you know, especially the bailout, the $400 million bailout of his family. So he's a corporate guy. I mean, not ability wise, but that's where he comes from. He got this sweetheart inside deal that all these DSA types are supposedly railing against. So I think somebody like Susana Mendoza, could make real hay against LEG by resuscitating that story. There needs to be an accounting for it, because the interview I said, he gave, you know, some softball interview to Marian Ahern, and his answer was something like, you know, first of all, I wasn't working at the bank, and
I was in law school.
You know, those kind of parsing answers aren't going to work if they're prosecuted properly, because he did have a job at the bank. He didn't have a job at the bank after he ran for office, but he was there.
He was titled.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, so, you know, that's not going to wash. And when you give those sort of middling answers, it just feeds the story more. So we'll see. We'll see how they're able to prosecute it against him. I doubt the Chicago Press Corps will do much of the work, but some of the other candidates could.
With over three decades of serving up streetwise insight and local perspective on Page Two, the voice of John Cass has a home at johncassnews.com.
There's a new sheriff in town.
This will truly be the golden age of America. That's what we have to have.
But as he settles in, can you deal with the hysteria, the meltdowns, the constant whining?
I don't know what to do.
You know what you need? You need a good cup of common sense.
It's just common sense.
Like the kind of common sense you get when you subscribe to johncassnews.com. I'm John Cass, 40 years a journalist in Chicago.
The Chicago way.
I opened this website, John Cass News, so that you could have a decent cup of common sense.
This great country of ours was built on its entrepreneurial spirit.
It's time that you join the frontier of independent journalism at johncassnews.com.
Subscribe today to get access to great columns from John Cass, Dan Proft, and others. Don't be a chum alone and subscribe at johncassnews.com.
I mean, you talked about the DSA kind of aspect here, and nothing is, or no one is more, I guess not anymore. It used to be known as more an example of that than Johnson and the CTU, the way they push things. That's what's going to come down to, like the normal, because it's, you know, it's a one party city essentially as far as politics are concerned. It's going to come down to a rift between the centralists, the more commonsensical Democrats, and then DSA. How are any of them going to peel off to anybody other than Johnson? I mean, I know his polling is abysmal, but we know that's not always reflective of what's really going on.
Well, I mean, right. So one of the things, I'm still sort of waiting to see if there's a shoe that's going to drop. I like Stacey Davis Gates gets switched in for Brandon, mm-hmm. switches himself in for Brandon Johnson. But maybe that doesn't happen. Probably too much for her to give up to roll the dice on that.
She'd have to sell that house in Indiana, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, not to mention, you know, you got two salaries coming in from the the city union and the state union and all that stuff. And she can, you know, jabber on without consequence. So that's a nice position for her to be in. But assuming that he does run again and they try to run the gauntlet with him. I mean, you know, I think it's one of those things where people just get done with you and it just doesn't matter how crowded the field is. That's what happened to Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's kind of what I think will ultimately happen with Brandon Johnson. As I say often, JB and BJ, they have the same program. It's the same program. There's no policy differences between them, but he's just such a iconoclastic race hustler. He's just so in your face with the racial politics all the time. And it rubs people the wrong way. Even a lot of black voters, you know, supposedly his people, quote unquote, because you're supposed to, the way you handle the racial issue, if you're coming from the left, is by, demagoguing honkies and demagoguing Trump, of course, but it's a soft touch. Because people understand that the city is segregated. They sort of, in a lot of circles, I think they tacitly desire it to be, which is part of the city's sickness. And he just puts it in your face all the time, and people don't want to deal with it. And I think that's as much as anything, what has turned people off and made him box office poison. So I think, you know, like Susana Mendoza, Ali G, because of the money and the institutional support, maybe John Kelly, you know, maybe there'll be a surprise like that Brewer guy. I don't know. I don't know much about him, but you're going to have somebody that basically has a couple of positions that are not on the DSA platform. Like, no, I don't want to defund police. As maybe she'll even promote the idea of more competition in K-12, but they'll be on board for, you know, the other 80% of it, and they'll rail against Trump and they'll play the same identitarian politics. So I think that's how they stake out that reasonable ground to try to catch, you know, cops and first responders and the whatever is left of the sort of centrist caucus within the electorate in the city. And whoever does that probably wins. So that's why I think that, you know, I wouldn't anoint Ali G quite yet. I think there's some other people that can make a play.
Well, one name you mentioned is Mr. Kelly, and I don't really know him, but I would assume he's I've heard he's a lobbyist. I haven't seen his work. Can you tell us more about him? Do you know him?
Yeah, he's a lobbyist for, you know, a lot of well-heeled interests in Chicago and Illinois. It has been for some time.
Would I call him a soldier for the combine back in the day?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's what he does, right? I mean, the lobbyist for the most part, they're sentinels for the rent seekers.
And right.
So, I mean, that's what he does. Yeah.
He's represented groups like the White Sox, United Center, Bally's Casino. I mean, heavy hitters. So he's going to have money.
Yeah. AJ Pierzynski, who I know a little bit and is a conservative guy. I like him a lot. And Chris Chelios are like his campaign co-chairman. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, he's another guy that will do you've seen some of the ads, I'm sure, of him riding on the L doing that routine about that everybody deserves safety. So he Mendoza are going to definitely try to push the public safety issue and trying to occupy that space as the candidate who's going to bring peace to the streets and end some of the chaos on the L and frankly everywhere else.
Yeah, it's a sad commentary when we have to say that people have the right not to be burned alive on public transportation in Chicago.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to give those violence will not be tolerated on the CTA signs time to work, John. That was a great innovation. People just need signs. They didn't know. They didn't know.
They didn't. They also didn't know that the people that they directed it at, the ad campaign, are illiterates. They can't read because a guy, there was a murder just the other day on the L or in of CTA employee.
Yeah, but if they could read, then they would abide the no, don't get acts of violence. I mean, it's so infantilizing. It's so insulting. Yeah. And that's, you know, that Eileen Madigan, Cullerton, O'Malley, Burke, whatever her name is, she is, again, the standards are so low. She's not Kim Fox, thus she must be doing a great job. She's right. Said, I support the Safety Act. She does this insulting gambit with signage as the way to combat violence on the CTA. She says, you know, somebody should do something. The General Assembly should do something about the electronic monitoring program, where Beach, the chief judge, says, you know, basically, we've got about, 1 in 10 people on electronic monitoring, which is a universe of a couple thousand. We don't know a little bit more. We don't know where they are. Oh, so, and now Eileen Burke comes in, you know, months later and says the legislature should do something. These guys are all past the buck, present the facades.
Yeah.
They give the appearance of change while protecting continuity. That's what these guys are. So she is,
right.
She's like slightly more competent, and she's not playing racial politics. But she just does the symbolic bull jive that means nothing while supporting the structural infirmities of the system.
It illustrates how pathetic Tony Preckwinkle and Kim Fox were to present a justice system or a criminal justice system that was so devastated and so decrepit and so rotten that even a seemingly normal person who is continuing the status quo is deemed wise and preferable to what had been.
Yeah.
And Preckwinkle got away with it because Brendan Riley tried to go after her and he failed miserably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, this, you know, what's the saying of many? This town ain't ready for reform.
Right.
Well, if you want to pivot a little here, Dan, you drew my attention to this because I don't seek the Tribune much anymore. But editorial from them name dropping you as the end of conservative politics and money spigot in Illinois for seemingly. I mean, that's kind of being a little flippant, but it did outline that it looks like the tap is off as far as cash flow into Illinois politics. And I think I know why I think that is, but I'd be curious to see what your response to that is.
Yeah, well, I didn't catch it either. Somebody sent it to me because I don't read the Tribune.
I figured. I didn't want to paste it with the wrong brush. Sorry.
Yeah, because why would you? It's just a mindless. And this is another example of mindlessness. I've talked to Chris Jones. That's his name, right? The editor. Yeah. Talked to him a couple of times on my program, and he's an affable enough guy, but they're in complete contradiction. They have no idea what they're talking about. Chris Jones and whoever constitutes the editorial board these days. It's a joke. So
he's supposed to run it.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, what are the other names on that board these days?
The only name that counts is the managing editor. Who was one of the ringleaders of the Get Cass movement. Let's protect Soros and get Cass.
Right. And so it just persists and the talent level continues to go down at a 45 degree angle, like every other institution in Illinois. And you know, the Fourth Estate is an institution. Jones, the point of the editorial was like, oh, there's an opportunity for a reset for the GOP. And the hilarious thing is the picture associated with the editorial is this political consultant that nobody's ever heard of or will named Colin Corbett, who's running as an independent in the governor's race after making this big, you know, declaration. I'm leaving the Republican Party because of Trump. So the GOP is going to pivot by adopting the leftist policies of a guy who left the Republican Party over Trump. Sure, that makes sense. And then they go on to talk about me and Uline's funding of PACs and candidates over the last decade. And it's somehow I was in charge of the party, or Uline was in charge of the party. This is just classic, right? It's emblematic of everything in Chicago and Illinois. The people in charge of organizations or institutions, they're never responsible for failures or bad acts that occur. So Tom Cross, Jim Durkin, Tony McCombie, on the House side, the last three House GOP legislative leaders, and you know, John Curran and Christine Rodonia, the people in charge of the House and Senate Republican caucuses, they're not responsible for the super minority status they find themselves in. Even though, you know, they have campaign committees and they recruit and support candidates, that they're completely and also. And this has been going on for a long time. They recruit and support candidates as they themselves practice that support sort of milquetoast policies that have been completely rejected, that they've been in charge for as long as I've been an adult. And all you've seen is a steady decline in the GOP, losing one suburban community, one collar county after the other, such that they are not only in what seems to be a semi-permanent super minority, but finally the donors have dried up because they don't see a point to it. And the funny thing is that they're shutting down this pack that this IE pack that I set up to support Darren Bailey in 2022 as the occasion, you know, finally it's all over. Dude, I was done with this in 2018. This, you know, we made this effort to try to get better candidates and save Republican seats in primaries so that you would have real commitment to conservative reform, and we could make the Republican Party a conservative reform party with candidates that are actually act consistently with who they say they are. Those legislative leaders I mentioned before, oh, I'm conservative. Oh, yeah, I'm conservative, but I oppose individual two-way rights like Jim Durkin, and I support marriage redefinition like Jim Durkin, and I'm sort of, you know, open to being pro-choice like Christine Redonia, and I'm for open-ended gambling everywhere. I'm for open-ended marijuana dispensaries everywhere. I voted for, and excuse my caucus, when they voted for a fracking income tax hike. I mean, I'm sorry, what exactly is the promise of the Republican brand to deliver in terms of policy? This is the bipartisan combine that you coined, John, and been writing about for so long. They were junior partners. So all this is going on. We're trying to pivot to conservative reform and get candidates in legislative offices that will provide that leadership, and then ultimately level them up to higher offices or get people from the outside who are committed to that policy view, so that we can have a Mitch Daniels renaissance. We can have a Scott Walker renaissance. And so it didn't materialize. We had chances and we missed them. Jeannie Ives against Rahner in 2018 in particular. And after that race, I'm like, okay, this is over. I got, you know, I wasn't doing this anymore. I got called back. I asked to come in and do the IE for Bailey. So I did it in 22, and I was done again. And then I got called by my friend Ted Dabrowski and your friend Ted Dabrowski. And I wanted, you know, okay, I'll help, because he's going to run, and Bailey is a non-starter. He destroyed all of whatever credibility he had by how he performed in the general election in 2022, including with his supporters like me. And so I came back. But I mean, like, I saw this as quixotic 8 years ago. This is already over. But they're just using the occasion of me shutting down that pack I stood up in 22 to say, oh, you know, finally the bad old era of Proft and
you and Proft.
Yeah, that's over. Okay, and then the same turn, they say, hey, but you know, hopefully we'll find some donors like Uline and Ken Griffin. Okay, well, good luck with that.
They've all been put. There's a reason neither one of them live in the state anymore.
Well, there's a one way to look at this that I've been wondering about as you've been talking. Is the problem with the Republican Party, pardon me, the weakness of its members, or is it the nature of corporatism itself? Because they're all corporatists. They're all part of the corporation. They're the guys who chair committees for transgender rights and so forth in a large company. Is that what it is? The nature of corporatism? Is that what the problem is?
I mean, it's some of it. That's some of the problem, and it certainly has been over time. But the problem now is there's no point to the party's existence. I mean, they make reference, the Tribune editorial, just to go back to that, for Tony McCombie. She's got some good ideas. Okay, what are they? I have no idea. This is just making these generic appeals. You know, I'm for things that are good, and I'm against things that are bad. Wonderful. There's no leadership. I mean, there's nobody who even wants to lead. They just want to play that little inside game to protect their fiefdoms. They're not even trying. Right. Maybe they don't know how to try. They're not particularly bright. They're not particularly skilled. John Curran, the Senate super minority leader for Republicans. I mean, that guy. That guy is a jellyfish. There's no point to his existence except to have the title and the pension. And I don't know. And, you know, be seen as some sort of, you know, a community leader because I'm a state senator. I'm a state rep. There's no point to the party. Where are they on offense with respect to Pritzker? With respect to, you know, they once in a while, you have a press release, cheap shot, you know, not cheap shot, it's a legitimate shot, but it's just like, it's so cheap and easy. There's nothing sustained about it. And they don't, to my discernment, there's not even an effort to do anything that is sustained, even in an era where you can do a lot of things in a sustained way at relatively low cost because of know, digital media, now AI. I just like you have, there has to be a point to your organization's existence, and then you're out, you're supposed to go out there and prosecute that point, make those appeals, take on the other party. I mean, there's just no footprint. The Republican Party, and it's been this way for a long time, is like a legal fiction. It's a rumor that you hear about. And look at the candidates that we fielded. And here again, when you have an opportunity like Ted Dabrowski to reset, right, that's a real reset, to even in an air, in a cycle where it would be very difficult, it's an uphill battle. There's not going to be the donor support because there's such fatalism. At least you would present like an intelligent, thoughtful, competent candidate, and that would be something to build upon, even if you lose. You're not going to build upon anything when Bailey and Del Mar go down again. There's no adult leadership of the party that would try and drive better outcomes, policy wise or politically.
I mean, look at the demographic. Is there a future there? Because outside of, you know, Chicago and Cook County and parts of DuPage, votes pretty red. I mean, it's blatantly obvious. But is there a way? Is there a future in? It would be a long game, but drawing people out of the places they are to places where their vote would have more weight. I mean, I feel like that's kind of worked on the national scale, where you get, you know, people leaving Illinois, leaving California, going to other places where they're, you know, they're growing numbers, getting more seats in the House, that kind of thing. Is there a pathway there at all?
Well, I mean, the counterintuitive reality is that the worse they make it, the better it gets for them, because who are the people that are leaving? People that are of a center right perspective, people that are commonsensical, people that say, I can't make this make financial sense to be here anymore relative to my options. So you're losing more and more members of the common sense slice of the electorate with each passing year, making it better and better for the DSA types, at least until their house of cards comes crashing down, which it will. But, you know, on what timeline, what does that look like? I don't know. I mean, look, this has always been the case, and it continues to be the case. The Republican Party has to be a party of the suburbs, or it's not going to be a majority party.
Well, when that house comes crashing down financially, you can count on the Republicans, particularly those corporatists, to argue for a bailout. They will argue a federal bailout, and they'll support it.
Right. The Republican Party, the problem with the Republican Party, I mean, you know, sort of in a sentence, is it's in Illinois, it's always been a big government party. We missed the Reagan Revolution because it was Jim Thompson. We missed the Gingrich Revolution because it was Jim Edgar. And then after George Ryan went down, it's just been wandering in the wilderness for the better part of 25 years. So it's never been a party that's conservative reform. Conservative reform is the one thing we haven't tried. And it's the one thing that's worked everywhere in the Midwest that it has been tried, which was the whole point of what I was part of trying to do for the last decade or so. But you have to be a party of the suburbs. So, I mean, this waiting for Godot or hoping there's some sort of mass epiphany, you have to go out and take the fight to these neo-Bolsheviks that are in state rep and state senate and county board and school board seats in places like DuPage County. I mean, if you can't win DuPage County, then there's not much to talk about. And that's where things are at.
We got kind of fatalist in our conversation with Charles Lipson a couple of weeks ago, and kind of led to that, you know, it's nothing's really going to change until, you know, the bleep hits the fan and everyone's fighting for scraps. Is there any way to stave that off? I mean, I feel like every facet of Chicago you look at, that's coming, that's on the horizon, and it's getting bigger every day, from pensions to, you know, personnel to violence to property tax values to costs of everything. I mean, the tolls are going up like crazy every, you know, now, and it's every bill's coming due piece by piece. Is there any way to stop that? And what happens on the other side? How do you pick up the pieces on the other side if it doesn't?
Well, I mean, you know, the whole it's coming, it's here. I mean, it's when is it going to happen? It's been happening. It's not it happens, you know, a little bit at a time, and then it Gradually, can happen a lot of bit at a time. Yeah, then you could have a pension fund unable to pay current beneficiaries, and then you have a real moment. And that was sort of what you're referring to, John, is, you know, then everybody will press the panic button, say, oh, we need a federal bailout, and Republicans will go right along with it, rather than saying, look, we warned you, the bridge. Yeah, we warned you, and you decided to speed ahead and ridicule us in the process. And so now you want us to go along with some plan to pilfer from others to make good, to make your unholy deals good. No, I don't think so. I mean, that could be a moment, but you know, when that happens and what that looks like and what emerges from the wreckage, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's, there's a good probability that it'll be anything positive, just because, as I said before, there's no competition. There's no partisan competition. There's no intellectual competition. I mean, it's just sort of a mindless state that has contented itself with believing the beautiful lies told by the same cast of characters with different names.
I deign to say this, but I mean, if you're looking at the national level, I mean, our country's seeing a debt growth that, I know, in the early Obama days, people would have, you know, stormed the castle over when we were talking about $8 billion in debt, and what if we get to $20 billion in debt? Now we're pushing $45 billion in debt, or trillion in debt, rather. Are we on the same pathway there, it feels? I mean, it doesn't feel like there's an answer there either.
No, and the answer that, to be fair on the topic, the answer that J.D. Vance and Scott Bessent gave this week is insufficient. I mean, J.D. Vance saying that, oh, don't worry, Scott Bessent has a plan and the president has empowered him. I mean, that's really just silly, way too flippant. But, but J.D. Vance is kind of a big government Republican from everything I can tell, too. So 28 should be interesting. Nevertheless... It's sort of the same problem we have in Illinois. It's you have both parties that have come together to engage in profligate spending for generations. And there have been fits and starts to do something structural about reducing the size and scope and expense of government. But they've only temporarily slowed the pace. And here we are. Bessent and others and some believe that we can grow our way out of it. But Brian Westbury over at First Trust had a good comment this week about that, I think, which is problem with that philosophy is that, first of all this debt starts and government spending that fuels it crowds out private investment. So what we're doing right now is eating our seed corn. So it's hard to grow when you're eating your seed corn. And the bottom line is you have to stop spending. You have to look at the big ticket items in federal government, which are entitlements and the Pentagon too. That's fine. And you have to restructure them. It would be good to recommit to a DOGE style effort, for all the, you know, the waste, fraud and abuse. That's fine, but you're not going to do anything to change the obligations that are being incurred and the debt that is being racked up because of the promises that have been made until you change the incentives and the extent of those promises in transfer programs. It's just that simple. That's that simple at the state level, and it's that simple at the federal level. The difficulty is the political will and the political skill to manage and navigate a structural change in programs that a lot of people have become dependent upon.
Well, this has been fun. I mean, yeah.
No, all light and happiness.
Slit your wrist now?
Yeah, yeah. Seriously. I'm glad that, you know,
well, if you want something positive out of this, think of Willy Wonka, because we're the character Augustus Gloop, who fell into the chocolate river while he was eating chocolate and then got sucked up into a pipe and disappeared. That's us.
Well, the good news is the socks are in first place. So everything's right with the world.
And the fire.
And the fire, yeah. Well, Dan, what are you doing for when you're not scratching on the wall of our demise? What are you doing for fun besides rafting down the Colorado River, which I'm so jealous of? That's amazing.
Yeah, it was a great trip. It was fun. It was nice to do something other than golf too. My next vacation, which is over Labor Day, I'm going to Jackson to do some fly fishing. So that'll be fun.
Nice, nice.
Cool. Yeah.
What are you reading now? That's, you're always got your head in a book.
You know, a book I recommended this week that I'll recommend just off politics again to try to do something that's less, to try to advocate for something less dismal. Yeah. Gene Wojciechowski, who you know, was a reporter, or maybe still is, I don't even know, reporter for ESPN, sports reporter. He's got a new book called All Carry. And it's, I mean, you don't even have to be an avid golfer to appreciate it. It's about golf, but it's, as you know, most good sports books and movies are, it's about more than the sport. All Carry is the name of it. And I would say it's sort of like a cross between The Natural and Field of Dreams, but it's golf. And he did a really nice job, really good. And I think, I mean, I knew him back in the day. I think he's still in Wheaton.
Hmm.
He lives in DuPage County. So anyway, All Carry, Gene Wojciechowski, is a book I'd recommend for something enjoyable, not political.
Yeah, I would assume you've already read Walker Percy's golfing books. Yeah.
I have not read Walker Percy's golfing books. No.
Oh. Well.
All right. So that's a recommendation for me.
Yeah. Okay. I'll say no more. Yeah, let it go. Let it be discovered.
Okay.
You know, there you go.
So many books, a little time.
Right. That's for sure. I just refinished my read of The Cosmos, one of my favorite mind cleansing journeys into the universe.
Yes.
Is it spiritual?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Dan, always good to catch up with you. We'll hope it's happier times in the future. It's just a lot of suck going on right now in politics and the community here in Illinois and Chicago. It's just,
if you want to be heartened, think of the fat boy governor playing with his broken toys on the carpet, looking on his castles and broken soldiers, and crying a little bit because he has nothing to do, no ambition left in his life. I mean, he wants to be president, but I don't think he can make it.
Actually, Dan, before we go, I'd love you to parse out what do you think 2028 will look like in the presidential field. I know it's early-ish and it's kind of grabbing at straws, but what do you think it right now it looks like?
Yeah, it's pretty muddled picture on for the DSA party. Yeah, I find it hard to believe that that Pritzker, regardless of how much money he spends, can get through that primary either. I just don't think he's a particularly attractive candidate in any respect. And he's coming from a failed state, which is why I think it's difficult for Gavin Newsom too. I think and where the energy is probably less one of these guys and more somebody like a P-Butt or an AOC. I mean, that's where the energy is. And part of it, I suppose, will be predicated on how the midterms go. Because if these DSA candidates go down, then you may see, you know, more of a revolt by the Mensheviks, since you mentioned them, John, the neo-Mensheviks, to move the party, at least perception-wise, to the center and nominate somebody who's going to be perceived as more closely identified as centrist than what they're pumping out now. I don't know. I think it's a party in real tumult, and how well these candidates do that the apparatchiks have nominated may shift some of the fortunes of some of these presidential aspirants after November.
What about the presidential aspirant that we all know to be a soft, gooey gentleman in a soft, fuzzy blue sweater, Rahm Emanuel, who's desperately seeking love from the media and wants to be president. Where does he sit?
Yeah, a little tiny dancer.
Yeah, a little tiny dancer.
Yeah, you know, I mean that he's got a problem. Well, he's got a bunch of problems. He wasn't a good mayor. He's just really unlikable. And
he covered up the police shooting of the Laquan McDonald.
Yeah, to the extent he would get any traction, you could bet that that would come back. And you know, he's Jewish. That's a problem in that party right now. Let me just be straight about it. And you know, and writing op-eds in the Wall Street Journal and doing podcasts and stuff.
It's so just rum. Yeah.
Yeah. You can do that when you have sort of the institutional backing in a small, relatively small universe like Chicago. Yeah. To try to scale that approach nationally with no appeal and no sort of defining issue or moment or performance. I think he's going nowhere.
Tam, what do you think about the other side of the hill? I mean, you mentioned J.D. Vance earlier and what that might look like. I mean, is there anything in the tea leaves on that?
You know, I don't know. I think, you know, probably it's J.D. Vance. I mean, I think J.D. Vance is still the favorite, but I mean, certainly Marco Rubio stock has improved greatly over the last year or so. I think there's a lot of opportunity there for Rubio, but you know, maybe he will stick with what he said, which is if Vance runs, and I'm going to back him, and maybe it becomes the Vance Rubio ticket that people have been sort of promoting that idea. It's possible. It's possible. I sort of alluded to it earlier. J.D. Vance has a real opportunity with this anti-fraud task force to continue over the next 2 years leading into 28 to produce results there. And that would be something he'd get credit for. But I think J.D. Vance is somebody who believes that government is a force for good. And it's a real problem. And it's a real discussion the Republican Party should have about what kind of parties it's going to be.
Well, where would Rubio fit into that? Because he's something of a neocon. So he, by definition, would be a fellow who believes in the power of government.
Yeah, he gave a speech at Georgetown a couple years ago that I talked about a bit, promoting this idea of common good capitalism, which is a little bit like George W. Bush talking about compassion and conservatism. The terms are redundant. Common good capitalism, that's redundant. Compassion and conservatism is redundant if you have a real understanding of the capitalism and conservatism in these cases. But it was really just a cover for basically industrial policy. I think Rubio still retains more of a Reagan-esque posture as it comes to his brand of conservatism. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's as much of a neocon as maybe he was once upon a time. He's certainly not Lindsey Graham. And J.D. Vance is very much of the populist variety. I think he's a smart guy, but there's just too many instances, and you saw it, frankly, in the debate in 2024 with Walz, where I agree with him on this and I agree with him on that, but we have to do it a different way. No, Walz was operating from faulty premises, and that's what Vance should have said on green energy and other matters, and that's not what he said. So I think they both are not as, you know, free market as I am. I think Rubio is probably closer than Vance is, but I think that conversation should be fleshed out in the after the midterm and in the months leading up to 28, maybe. Maybe if there was, you'd have more candidate. You get more candidates in, and you really have the kind of robust debate that is warranted on the topic. Especially as we were talking about earlier, as we sit here with $40 trillion in debt.
Right.
Oh, one more thing I have to ask you about. The big story this week is not in politics, is the crowd of women in Massachusetts lining up and wearing pink. And I go back to what Dan Proft has warned us about, which is sentimental barbarians will destroy us and destroy our nation and our culture. And I see them gathering storm to support this poor, murderous woman who killed her three children. And I ask myself, why? Why is that? And I can't get it. And maybe you do, Dan.
Yeah, it's pretty disquieting to hear these women say things like, you know, it could have been me, it could have been my sister-in-law. It's something that happened to Lindsay Clancy. It's not something she did, but it's very much fits in with the sort of victimization righteousness culture. That we celebrate victimization, particularly phony victimization. The way to, you know, absolve your members of your clan is to characterize them as a victim. And so you have these misguided women out there uttering all sorts of silliness. I mean, they don't even have the facts of the case right. Of course they don't, because the facts don't matter. They don't have the law right. Of course they don't, because the law doesn't matter. It's just, and I mean, you know, Flannery O'Connor's riff on sentimentality is the best out there. And it's paraphrasing her, ultimately, sentimentality leads to the gas chamber. And that's what you're seeing in our culture, not on a grand scale, but in these instances. The same thing you have with the Carmelo Anthony case. Now that has a racial overtone, and the Lindsey Clancy case has a sex, you know, gender overtone, but it's the same thing going on.
God help us, everyone. But you're right. I mean, that's what we've got. And I think generation upon generation of our children being propagandized by these same sentimental barbarians in the schools.
Well, I mean, there was this comment that was made. I can't remember who made it. On the occasion around Independence Day of our 250th birthday, mm-hmm. There was a piece. Was it Victor Davis Hanson? I can't remember. But the piece just argued that the battle for America over the next 250 years starts in our schools. I mean, that's where the battle's at.
Right.
Yeah. If you want to talk about all these cultural and fiscal maladies that we've inflicted upon ourselves, well, there's some quick fixes out there to provide some time. But ultimately, if you want to change the trajectory, then you have to wrestle control of the schools back and change what we're doing at the K-12 level. It's just it's a must.
Yeah, amen. Well, thanks, Dan. I know we tried to swing away from the negative miss and come back around, but John always pulling us back in.
Well, we know where the battlefield is, so now if we want to fight.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a big if.
It is a big if.
Jeff, it'll be better. It'll get better. Don't worry about it. Just put a song in your heart.
Yes. The sun will come out tomorrow.
Yes. Well, you know, I always say, don't touch the ginger. So, Dan, always good to talk with you. I appreciate you spending the morning with us.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good to talk to you both as well.
Thanks, Dan. I got something to say about you, but I'll wait till you're gone so I can say it.
Oh, perfect. All right, great.
Thank you.
That's a Chicago way.
Talk to you guys later. See ya.
For Dan Proft, morning host on Chicago's Morning Answer, WIND, AM 560. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio. And for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, where you always get a good cup of common sense. Join us again next time, won't you? For the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.